The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticise. You are listening to ACH. I'm Andy, your host, and today I'm delighted to welcome back my good friend, Michael Walsh, for a special appearance. Mike, are you with me? Mike, are you there?
It is indeed a very special appearance. It's been a long time, and I've missed you all, you personally. You've been a great friend of mine for many, many years. And, of course, it's a wonderful opportunity to reconnect with the world through the spoken rather than the written word. So I'm glad to be back, and thank you very much for the invitation, Andrew.
Thank you so much, Mike. And let's start off. We were last on the air August the 5th, I believe, of last year. So it's been about 11 months. Obviously, a lot's happened in that time. Anything you'd like to say that you've been up to from a personal perspective, and then your thoughts on the sort of COVID, the lockdowns and the vaccines?
Well, I don't think you're prepared to give me several hours, so I'm going to have to try to truncate this some way. Yeah, it's been one of the most active and interesting and certainly colourful years of my life, despite COVID lockdown, because here in Spain, I think it coincided with your own situation, wherever you are in this unfortunate world we inhabit these days. I think it was about March the 17th on 2020, of course, in which we were all locked down, which is, of course, a prison term. But since then, during, well, a little bit later, 2 or 3 months after that, we were fortunate. Not everybody is fortunate. Many, many people have suffered badly, taken their own lives and been sent to the other side prematurely simply because they didn't have the medical assistance and analysis that they thoroughly deserved. And of course, other people, the young people, have lost their jobs, their livelihoods. They've lost their businesses, many businesses with several generations in the making, and they've gone too. So things have changed. But for reclusive writers like me who can work from home, from anywhere, I am minimally inconvenienced by the lockdowns and all of the rest of the repression that so many people are suffering. But we, my good wife and I, decided, I think it was last June, to perhaps relocate from very, very repressive Marxist-led Spain and live in Hungary instead, which is, of course, much more to our way of life and thinking. So now bear in mind, Andrew and listeners, that this was a time when people were not so much locked down, but they certainly, even in Spain, couldn't go from province to province. We lacked the freedom of the road that we've all taken for granted. But we loaded our car sometime in the early summer of last year, and off we went without a care in the world, and we didn't need a care in the world, as it so happened. Everybody said that we were absolutely crazy to even consider crossing a national border, in our case, from Spain to France. And off we went. And the problem with Spain is it's a big, big country. It's the largest country in Europe. So we have to travel over 700 kilometers, a long, long way, before we're even out of Spain. And there's people further away from the borders than we are, those who live in Marbella, in the Costa del Sol, Andalucía, for instance. So it was 709 kilometers before we got to the French border, expecting to be stopped, COVID tested, go through all of the procedures and all the rest of it. We were prepared for this. We didn't even know we were in France. We just sailed across the border. There is no border. There is just a European Union around our side that announces that you are now in France. And on we carry through Perpignan, past Lyon, into Switzerland. No problems at all. No border. In and out several times. Stopped at a hotel in Switzerland. They wanted €200 just for the night. I said, this is a bit excessive. He said, no. He said, it's a bit of Switzerland. So with the sun going down and ready to bounce off the horizon, my wife and I had about 100 kilometers to go to the nearest border, which was Germany. And off we went. And we made it just before dark, and we got a nice little place, because we haven't got much money, by the way, if you're listening. we got a nice little hotel for about €70 for the night. And from there on, Andrew, we were away for about a month or something like that. We just went from border to border. We went from Germany into Austria, back into Germany, and several times. There was no borders of anything of that kind. We crossed them several times, different laws on different sides of the border, but the only reason that you knew that you were in Austria or Germany or whatever the case may be was a roadside sign announcing that as being a fact. And in the end, we decided that rather than Hungary, we would get a bit exhausted, and we were running out of funds. So we took off from Salzburg, and we took the road for Genoa, a beautiful seaport in Italy. And again, we went over the very famous Brenner Pass, World War II, and Mussolini and Adolf Hitler. Got to Genoa, had a wonderful evening there, and a day or so later, we came back to Spain. And only once had we been stopped. I don't know how many kilometres we've done. It must have been round Europe. You picture it yourself. It's a big, although it's the smallest continent on Earth, it is quite big when you're travelling by road. But there was one incident when we were driving well into France, and I saw a duenna car behind me, heavily liveried one, as liveried as, say, a police car with the blue flashing lights and everything. Take an interest in me, pull a little bit behind me, and he stuck on my tail for about 10, 15 kilometres. I said to my wife, we're going to get pulled. For some reason, whatever the case may be, I've got Spanish number plates on, of course. And sure enough, just before the next service earlier, the customs car guys overtook us, blue light flashed on, came on, and we followed the police car into a bay set aside in the service area. And these guys were the kind of guys that you really do, the gendarmerie, you really do want on your side. They were big. They were big guys, and they were hard, and they were tough. And but their English was quite good, and they'd have to be in that trade, wouldn't it? And they were very, very kind to us. They did go through everything meticulously, what we had in our boot, what we had in the car, and of course questioned us as to what our reason was for being there, where we'd come from, where we were heading, and all the rest of it. But as soon as it became apparent, there was nothing to do with COVID, nothing at all to do with that, no questions asked at all. And as soon as they were satisfied that we were what we said that we were, these guys were ever so nice and so helpful. You know, they left us with a very, very warm feeling of France. And they even gave us recommendations of where we might stay in Switzerland and places that we might enjoy visiting. They were wonderful guys, and I was very glad they were on our side. And then, am I talking too much, Andrew?
No, no, it's very interesting, Mike, to hear about your travels.
Okay, so when we got back to Spain, we, you know, the repression returned, nothing to do with us, fortunately or unfortunately, but we have many, many friends in Latvia. You know, I love the country. It's what has been dubbed the Canada of Europe. It's 40% forest, it has 40,000 rivers, 4,000 lakes. It's the most wonderful country on earth, and the people are so friendly, and there's no colours there at all. They are exceptionally rare to see anybody who's non-white in the Baltic states. There's three of them, of course. There's Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. Wonderful country to be in. We do have friends there who found us an apartment and all the rest of it. So off we went again. We left again in Spain. We traveled right through France into Germany, right through Germany, right through Poland. There was an interesting story because we were at Frankfurt am Oder, and which is right on the border of Poland. And we went into Poland, we did a Mexican wave as we found ourselves in Poland. I took a wrong turn and 2 minutes later was back in Germany. And we found our way back again. So in the space of about 10 minutes, if that, probably 5 minutes, we were in Germany, into Poland, out of Poland, into Germany, and back into Poland again, and carried on for Lithuania. And then into Latvia. And of course, we had six borders to cross, I think it was altogether. So every time we approached a border, we had our fingers crossed because of COVID and because of other considerations. Not once were we stopped. And it was the same when we returned a couple of months ago. We came back, we left Riga at Wednesday morning at 10 o'clock sharp, and we just hit the road, and we went right through Latvia, right through Lithuania, back again through Poland, right through the length of Germany, right past Dresden, right the way down to Freiburg, and near the Czech border, into France, over France, and right into Spain, and again, not once were we stopped, not once did we draw attention to ourselves. And interestingly enough, in that near 4,000 kilometer, 4 day car journey, I don't think we saw more than two or three police cars. Now, isn't that an amazing? So there's your lockdown for you in Europe. Don't go by aeroplane, don't go the conventional ways. Get in your car, hit the road, and enjoy the open road. It's still there. Let's hope it stays there. Thank you, Andrew. There's what I've been doing this past year, apart from running, managing, contributing to Europe Renaissance, and publishing several new books, which I hope that you will give me the opportunity to at least give a brief resume on. But there you are. That's my life so far. And I hope your lives have been as interesting and as colourful as mine since the lockdown.
Thank you, Mike. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because you went through all that travel in a period of our history that we've experienced some great lockdown that we've never experienced before. So it's amazing that you got all that done. I have one question, because obviously I was aware that, you know, of you moving to Latvia and to Riga in Latvia. What was the reason that you decided to leave there and return to Spain?
Spain is repressive. We've been here, I've been here 13 years, my wife has been here 8 years, and We live a very reclusive life, and basically we are wherever we and our laptops are. We can operate anywhere. We can go to India if we wanted, which is unlikely. But as long as we've got a laptop and a roof over our heads, we can operate anywhere. We do love Lafayette. We have very, very dear friends of many, many years who look after us. They're virtual family. But what I was unprepared for, and if you are British and living in Europe, you will know the truth of what I say, is when the British Pension Service, allied, of course, to the National Health Service, claims that the healthcare service applies to Britons wherever they are in the European Union, yes, it does, but with big exceptions. So the arrangement that Britain has with Spain, which was actually brought in during the Franco period, it's got nothing to do with the European Union, the reciprocal health arrangements. Apparently there are 300,000 Spaniards who live permanently in the United Kingdom. A similar number of Britons live in Spain. So for this reciprocal reason, the Spanish are looked after by the NHS, and when they're in Britain, we are looked after by a far superior healthcare service here in Spain. No problems at all. Everything is free. I pay for absolutely nothing, except the dentists, which are very, very reasonably priced, and the optician, so the same as Britain in that respect, but I never pay for any prescriptions of any kind, and at my age, I need it, must be. I tell you what, the NHS would be glad to see me dead. You'll all benefit by smaller taxes when I kick the bucket. Hopefully it's not imminent. But when we got to Riga in Latvia, we found there was a total lack. The healthcare, I can't fault it at all. If anything, the only fault that I have with the Latvian healthcare is it was too darn good. They treated me as I'm an old Volvo now, but they treated me as if I should be in the shape of a Ferrari, and I'm not. But they were absolutely wonderful, but it cost. It took us about 2 or 3 months to make the transfer from Spain healthcare to Latvian healthcare. I don't know why we bothered, because it was non-existent. We paid for bloody well everything, and it cost us a lot of money, and we were running out of money. And for this reason, 2 or 3 months ago, we decided that we either had to work extremely hard to pay for our healthcare bills or return to Spain, where it is, I won't say free of charge. I contributed to the fund for 50 years of my working life. I'm only getting back what I paid in. But that was the reason we simply couldn't, for healthcare reasons, we couldn't afford to stay there. Apart from another, I suppose, an amusing thing is we moved there and spent one of the harshest winters on record in Latvia, which of course is a northern country anyway. But, you know, we're used to sub-zero temperatures in Britain, not in Spain, thank the Lord. But when the temperature drops to less than 20 degrees below, and on some days and nights, 27, minus 27, that's when you spit, and your spittle hits the ground as an ice cube. It is phenomenally cold. So, yeah, there is nothing to be of me to be seen, oh, my good wife, except our eyes. Yeah, I got this big type of fur hat that Putin and Russians wear. I've got clothes that I had to abandon simply because there is no need for them anywhere else. But temperatures like that, and the healthcare service having to be paid, although it is a wonderful healthcare, it left us no choice but to return. And we're happy we're done, so we're happy here.
Thank you, Mike. That's very interesting. And the other thing is, I'll tell you my position and feel free to deviate from it in any way that you wish. We want your opinions here, not to rubber stamp mine. But with the lockdowns, it was when it started off with the COVID, I really, you know, I couldn't wear a mask because I have respiratory problems. But I was wearing gloves everywhere, these plastic gloves and things like that. And as things went on and I started to become more sceptical, I stopped doing that. I haven't gotten sick or anything like that. But where we are today with this frantic push worldwide for everyone to take this vaccine that we know has caused all these different problems, even from the government's own figures, we're up to, in the UK, 1,300 and something people dead and nearly 300,000 people injured from the vaccine, and that's off the government website.
All lies. Absolutely all lies.
You go ahead. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's total lies because, you know, I think I'm telling you, everybody, what they already know, that if one of us was to be unfortunate enough to be knocked down by a bus, obviously the accident killed us. But if on the autopsy or whatever they do on these occasions, they discovered that there is a COVID or a cold or what used to be called flu in the system, then it is. And there've been so many memes about it, you know, that, you know, the person who came out of the airplane and his parachute failed to open, he was killed on impact, and you know, he's been written off as died of COVID. You know, there are a lot of jokes about Prince Philip, who died at 99 years of age, and the joke was that he was the first person to die of old age. So when they give figures saying about the number of COVID-related deaths, it is totally and absolutely fanciful. Take no notice whatsoever. And we do know that they're fraudulent about the makeup of these figures. So they have no more basis in reality than Little Red Riding Hood. Dismiss them. It's, you know, they're twisted and everything. It's a total fraud. I knew it immediately. I wasn't waiting for March the 20th. As soon as it hit, I could see, perhaps because of my experience as I have, we've seen so many hoaxes over the years on climate warming and all the rest of it, the Holocaust, of course. These are money-making scams, and for this reason, you go to jail and you question it. You know, you're not going to end the COVID theatre until you remove the people who make the laws relating to it, until you separate them from the investment opportunities that they are undoubtedly taking. Matt Hancock, it's out in the open. He and the rest of this criminal cult in Westminster are all benefiting from it. As a matter of fact, it was one member of the House of Lords, I've got his name somewhere, who said, it's the gift that keeps on giving. And of course it is. Soon you'll have to take an injection every 2 weeks, and soon it won't be free of charge. They won't even be paying you to take it. You'll be hooked on it because you are not even going to go to a health centre. You're not even able to go into a supermarket unless you can show a certificate to say that you have been vaccinated that very month. And that is when you will start paying for it. And you will again become perhaps more tightly manacled wage slave. We're not the working class anymore. We are the slave class. And the sooner people wake up to the reality, you know, my frustration is knowing at what stage the people are going to wake sufficiently to overthrow such a rotten, corrupt system. And the thing that I can't understand, and I do recall, Andrew, we talked about this on earlier occasions, is the situation in Soviet-occupied Europe until the collapse of the Soviet Union, so 1989-1990, was much freer than it is in Western Europe now, or anywhere in Europe now. It was much freer, and yet people were so offended by the repression, such as it was, that they gave their lives to throw off the manacles of the Soviet Union. And remember, we're old enough to remember the television newscasts about what was happening in Poland, in Lithuania, in Latvia, and the Czech Republic, as I think it was at the time, Hungary, of course, and the uprising in 1956, this sort of thing. And yet these people, as long as they continued with their life and not provoking the system, lived very, very good lives. And yet they were angry enough, frustrated enough to overthrow or fight their way out of the tentacles of the Soviet Union. Here in the West now, today, we are far more, we suffer far more greater than from repression than these people did. And yet we don't seem to have the will to overthrow it. It's very, very frustrating. This is why I turn to writing novels, simply because there are not enough people. They're so laid back about it. You know, I often say I'm filled with frustration, but I often say, you know, that back in my day, if I sent a newsletter out, it meant that we printed it out on an old cassette that in the 1960s, early 1970s, we printed it out on an old cassette, and the quality of the writing was absolutely abysmal. It's embarrassing. Very often, Suzanne, who's passed on, unfortunately, she would handwrite the messages, the addresses on the front of the envelopes. There'd be several hundred of them, and then we'd put them in a big bag that was provided by the post office, and we'd walk half a kilometre to the post office, and we'd put a stamp on every one of them, which cost us an arm and a leg. Now we just go on to the internet. We go into Euromanco UK, and now I send out a 100 or whatever the case may be. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. All the people are good for now. I see the old pictures. I love the old pictures of the British Union of Fascism, the huge rallies that they had at Olympia, the huge marches and demonstrations, the soldier-like formations, not just of the men who've been serving in the armed forces and were trained in that sort of thing, but the women too, the children, the great camps that they had. It was all very much like it was in Germany. What happened, Andrew, to that spirit? All they are now capable of doing is switching on their computer, and they think that they are going to bring about revolution by liking memes. God forbid. I don't see any way out of the present situation with the generation that we have. They are all pussies. Again, it's not just a political thing. As you know, I left school at 15 years of age in 1959. I went straight into the Merchant Navy. By God, they were men, and many of them had fought in World War II. Many of them had spent the best part of the war as prisoners of war of the Germans. That's another story altogether. But these were so masculine. They were such wonderful mentors to young men like me. It's all gone. I wrote a book about it. The Leaving of Liverpool is a best-selling book, would you believe? My experiences, many of them as a seaman. And it was a different world altogether, Andrew, an absolutely different world. Down on New York's east side, where all the great liners tied up, we were punching and fighting our way through every night. You wouldn't believe the life that I have led. But it was there was a Marlon Brando film, you know, about the same genre at the time.
On the waterfront, I think it was called. On the waterfront,
I think. The battles, the fights, the men. I don't know, the first officers who would, just on a whim, they would use the ship's bows to cleave a whale in half. Oh, it was unbelievable. But those men are gone now. All men are pussies. I don't relate to men anymore, simply because if I was to, imagine, go down to a local bar, which, as you might expect, they're called the Windsor or the Churchill, with the tin tables and the cheap beer, and I talk to the man, I know that he spent his entire life in a very mundane profession in Britain or whatever the case may be. As soon as I open my mouth, he finds out, he discovers that by the time I was 18, I had lived more than he would live in 10 lifetimes. We don't have anything in common. And this is a great frustration for people like me. Perhaps this is the reason, Andrew, why I'm so reclusive. And yours is the only program that I ever contribute to. And thank you for the invitation again, for giving me the opportunity. But times have changed, and how we're going to fight our way out of the net, I'm very good. I'm almost as good as George Orwell in my predictions, but I'm totally lost on this one. I cannot see 12 months. I can't see 6 months ahead. But any previous regime as crooked and as bent as these in Western Europe in the past would have been well overthrown by now. They would be strung up on lampposts right the length of Westminster. But it seems to me that they are blatantly ripping off, committing the foulest of crimes, and nobody anymore gives a toss. Now, how sad is that? And where is it all going, Andrew?
Well, it's interesting, Mike, you see, because my point, what I was going to get to was, I feel that, as you said, the COVID deaths were completely, overblown. I was referring to the deaths from the vaccine that are on the government website, but they won't report in the mainstream media. What I think the whole thing was designed to do, the inconvenience of the lockdowns, the inflating of the deaths, was they wanted to get this vaccine into people's bodies. And there's been many doctors that have come out and said that they can only see this as being a bad thing. We've had predictions from some doctors that this is going to kill people off within 3 years. We've had predictions from other people that it's there to trap people. What are your thoughts on the vaccine? I've never known anything in history be pushed so much by so many different agencies. You've got musicians promoting it. You've got people like Bruce Springsteen who won't allow anyone who's not vaccinated into their concerts. It's at all levels. You can get free entry to lotteries. You can get free hamburgers if you get a COVID jab. What's your opinion on what this vaccine is?
My every thought is negative. Being a seaman, I had to. I didn't have any choice about it, but we had to have vaccinations against smallpox and the tropical diseases that were best avoided if we were going to go to all of these countries around the world, which was fair enough, and we all went through it, and we never, ever had any problems with it. So I'm not against vaccination, I do recall that the flu vaccine, the anti-flu vaccine, was invented in the 1930s. It's been around a long time. And yet 40% of people still get flu, even those who have been vaccinated because of the variants of it. And they will not change that. So, but we do know that the side effects of flu can be quite devastating, as they were in my case, and I will not, under any circumstance, take vaccination against flu after my last experience. And I feel even more negative about the so-called vaccination against COVID. There is no such thing. COVID is a variant of flu. If they have, and the reason that they don't, they change the name to flu, a variant of the name of flu, is because the vaccines against flu were totally ineffective. I used to say here in Spain, you think flu is a cold country virus. It's not, but every year, you read in the newspapers here that the hospitals simply couldn't cope with the surge in flu cases. Now it's COVID cases. It's the same damn thing. And the reason, and I've got a son who is a very high level doctor in the hospital service, he says the reason that, intensive care units, he says, because they don't, he says, normally in a big hospital, there simply isn't a need. There would be superfluous to a requirement if, say, they had more than 10 very expensive intensive care beds. They're just not needed. You know, so if you had 20 or 30, then they're never going to be used. And yet these beds probably cost about £1 million, €1 million each. So it's wise budgeting. Except when people get the flu and they're getting on in years and they've already, as in my case, they've already got lung conditions, they've got underlying conditions. Of course, something, a ward that has only 8 beds in it is going to be overwhelmed if 9 people. People think that these intensive care units are elastic. They're not. They consist of about 8 or 10 or 12 or 15 bed units simply because this is wise budgeting. But if you're going to get a surge through any reason, it could be a natural disaster like an earthquake or a large fire or anything of that nature, then of course they're going to be overwhelmed. But it doesn't take much to overwhelm it, does it? It only needs 2 or 3 cases, not 2 or 300. This is the impression that they give. But you will remember how much now this is a link. It was the Nightingale hospitals, you know, to cope with the COVID. There was one in Birmingham that cost about 50 million. Now, where did that 50 million come from? Who invested in it? Where was the money coming from? Follow the dots that are all shaped the size of pound, like pound notes. And you will see it all goes back to the political elite. And it all goes back to the statement by that Lord, you know, in the House of Lords. It's a gift that keeps on giving. They are investing heavily. And the COVID theatre will end only when the... it is removed, the politicians are removed, the decision makers are removed, those who benefit from promoting the COVID are removed from making any profits. Only then will you see the end of COVID. So we all know the expression, turkeys don't vote for Christmas, and they don't want the end to this gift that keeps on giving. I think it was, I've got the meme somewhere, I forget his name, Stefano or something. He was an Italian professor, spent all his life in the top level of medicine in Italy, and very, very highly considered. He's got his own place on the Facebook and perhaps elsewhere, but it's all in Italian, unfortunately. But he was absolutely wonderful, but they shut him up fast. He said wearing a mask is like expecting a chain link fence to stop the mosquitoes coming through. And another one of his statements that I remember very, very well is, when this absurdity ends, millionaires will have become billionaires. And there is your problem. It's not a COVID problem. It's a corruption problem. And until this corruption is wrecked, becomes a train wreck, you are going to have to suffer. Your children will have to suffer, and their children will have to suffer the oppression related to COVID, as long as the political decision makers are making an absolute fortune of it. And don't tell me that they've got the best interests of the public at heart. These are the people who sent our boys off to Afghanistan. How many of them have died out in Afghanistan? They keep on sending our boys out to useless war because Washington DC tells them to, and they come back for every death. There is 10 casualties. They're in paraplegics. They're in wheelchairs. They're on crutches and all the rest of it. They've lost their eyes or half their head, or they're emotionally damaged so in such a way that they end up sleeping on the streets of Liverpool, Manchester, London and Birmingham. Tell me that this scum in Westminster is caring of our lives. We're talking about Bill Gates. Does anybody ever read the personal lifestyle of this creep, how he chases young girls, how he's an emotional wreck, how he loves to get drunk at events and all the rest of it. And this guy is calling the shots because he's one of the world's richest men and he could do so. His fortune, he could feed every face in Africa. He could eliminate all of Africa's problems tomorrow. What does he do? What does he send to the starving but vaccines? Because he makes money out of vaccines. Until this criminal class is rooted out and destroyed, just as flu would hopefully be destroyed, we are going to endure COVID for the rest of our lives, as our children, our grandchildren, and the rest of them are going to endure it. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, Mike. So it sounds to me like you're not buying in so much to, you know, this vaccine being designed to kill people off, as more designed to make money for the already super rich. Would that be your assessment?
I think it's very, very dodgy because, of course, it's coming from different sources. I haven't heard, I should imagine, knowing the Russophobia of British media, that if there was any negative report about the side effects of the Russian vaccine or the Chinese vaccines, then surely it would be on the headline news of the newspapers and, of course, absolutely, the BBC. I haven't heard any negative reports about the Sputnik vaccine, which is not to say that there aren't any. I think every vaccine, whatever it is, even the smallpox and all the rest of it, will carry a risk of some kind. But hopefully the risk doesn't outweigh the results of actually catching the disease that it's there to stop. This is not the case with this so-called, I'm not going to call it a vaccine, it is not a vaccine. When its failure rate is as high as it is, when the makers of it are absolved from any responsibility for its side effects at all, it is not a vaccine. Now, if somebody sells me meat in the supermarket, and then I find out later that it's not meat at all, it's never seen an animal, it's pure vegetable, and furthermore, it's polluted vegetable from which I'm going to carry, but then I make a claim because I got sick after I ate this fake steak. And then I say, well, it's okay because the government has decided that the manufacturers of this particular product cannot be prosecuted for the consequences of people becoming sick or ill or dying as a result of them eating the fake steak. Now, that, in what way does my statement there differ from the reality of the vaccine? They can't be held responsible. So are you going to really not go into a bank and rob it if you already know beforehand that to do so you will not be prosecuted? Of course you are. And this is the situation the big pharma makes. I remember the thalidomide scandal going back some time. It was some kind of a tablet that was given to pregnant mothers and the deformities that it caused. But the pharmaceuticals were brought to court and it cost them, oh God, trillions in compensation. Now, why were they so desperate to remove any possibility of them being prosecuted? It's common sense, isn't it? Bill Gates has already joined the others in this cult alliance for saying that we're overpopulated. It's a load of rubbish. The world is not overpopulated. The reason that they want the population reduced is because we don't need the workforce anymore because the computers have done it. I did see an interesting video on the making of Volkswagens in Germany, and this is a huge company, as you know. It produces tens of thousands of this particular model of car, the Volkswagen Saloon or whatever the case may be, and yet a factory that would at one time employ 50, 60, 70, 80,000 people is now producing more with 1,000 people. Now, it's the same with Liverpool. I remember as a young man, you avoided the dock road most time because it was teeming with dockers, stevedores, for the sake of the Americans listening to the program. There were tens of thousands of them. I would say that every house in the maritime city of Liverpool had somebody working on the docks. Now, today, Liverpool, now this is typical, so you can imagine the same for Southampton and London, everywhere else. It is actually shifting more cargo now than it did when it was the second city of empire. And yet, that is not employed one in a thousand of what they used to be. So what are the others going to do with the other 999? There's no work for them. They've got to be annihilated. It's the same as when I went to Halifax and I saw this guy. He had a printing machine about the size of a small box van. And I said, wow. I said, what does that do? And he said, this is what it does. And he showed me all of these hotel and holiday brochures, the full colour thing. You fold them twice. It's beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And he said, it only needs one man to produce these brochures. I said, that's wonderful. I said, well, what was it? Well, he said, we needed, 20 years ago, 10 years ago even, he said, we needed about 35 men, all highly trained men in different professions, to produce this quality and quantity of brochures. Now one man does it, one machine does it. I said, well, what's happened to the other 34? He said, you tell me. Bill Gates has got the answer, my friends. So have the rest of them in the World Economic Forum. You are superfluous to requirements. They don't need you anymore. The computers are doing your job. Soon, there won't even be a supermarket for you to go to. You'll go online, you will go around the shelves, you will pick what you want, and 10 minutes later, it'll be delivered to your door. So there are no more members of the staff in your supermarkets. And this, the same with the banks. Remember, there used to be a bank in every corner? Now there's a wine bar every country for those who are drinking themselves to death. We don't need people anymore. We are all superfluous to requirements. We are unwanted fat, and the vaccine is their way of getting rid of us.
Mike, that was fantastic information there. Now, we've got about 5 minutes left, but we can certainly run over. I just want to point the audience to your websites. Now, folks, these will be in the post for the show and andrewcantonhitchcock.com. The main one is Europe Renaissance, which is Mike's news website. And the other one for his books, which I hope you will support Mike with, is mikewalshwritingservices.wordpress.com. So you've got europerenaissance.com and mikewalshwritingservices.wordpress.com. So, Mike, please take some time to describe some of your books that have become available that you can recommend to the audience. And, of course, folks, any purchases of these books will help support Mike. So please go ahead, Mike.
It's all on the links that you are very kindly going to post. And, of course, Richard out there, and anybody who looks up Europe Renaissance, they're likely to hit the hot button. So please do support it, because I've got plenty of positives to tell you about. Don't think I'm a negative person. If it was a negative person, I'd have swung a long, long time ago from a lamppost. I'm not. I'm full of hope. The Europe Renaissance platform is, I think, and I know that I'm biased, is probably the best information, entertainment, and absolutely everything else platform you are ever going to encounter. So sometimes the worst day in your life can open doors to the best time of your life. And when they pull the plug on the ethnic European on October the 17th, 2020, it was the end of our world. It was like turning up at your shop in the morning and you find that the police have put a big padlock on it and you're deprived of your livelihood. That was the kick in the guts that we got. But with the help of our friends, especially the nations, how on earth can we compete with the likes of George Soros and the government sponsoring the radical left organisations on the pittance that comparatively we get? We can't do it. So go into the bookstore, people, and remember, it's very, very important. We're not just asking you to self-indulge. Oh, I like that book. I will buy that book. Listen, you've got over 70 book titles out there with the name Mike or Michael Walsh on the cover. And they cover, I would say, and nobody has disagreed with me on this one, nobody argues the case, I am Britain and Ireland's most prolific, multi-topic book author. Nobody equals me. There are over 70 books in there now. That we're talking not just the Reich, we're not just talking about Russia and the Soviet Union, we're talking about wonderful books like The Sculptures of the Reich, which is very popular, The Art of Adolf Hitler, And most of the books, I would say that they're not going to cause any problems. They could easily appear on the bookcases of the big bookstores of the United States and Canada and all the rest of it. So you're not ruffling feathers. But there are novels there. People say, well, you're writing novels. Well, I'm not equal in my life with Hitler, but all Hitler ever wanted to do, he was drawn by circumstance, time, and all the rest of it. All he ever wanted to be was an artist and a poet. That's all he ever wanted to be. And when war looked imminent in 1940 after the occupation of France, he said, I will resign. If my resignation means the end of war, we will withdraw right to the pre-Polish September the 1st, 1939 border, and I will retire to a life of writing poetry and painting. And of course, he was stopped. So he was drawn into it. All I ever wanted to be was a novelist. But of course, I got drawn into the political struggle with Colin Jordan at the time. But over 70 books, please, please buy them, because every time you do, and especially for your friends, you've got friends there, they all have birthdays, folks. They all have anniversaries of one kind or another. Go onto the bookstore and say, oh, Auntie Judith would love this book, or my Uncle Fred, or my son, or my daughter would love this book. Buy them as gifts for others. They are gift-wrapped by Amazon. Sorry, there's no alternative to Amazon. And they will be delivered. And I was a little bit disappointed, perhaps because I don't have a large platform, is recently published The Last Testament, Let God Be My Judge by Adolf Hitler. I defy anybody to read his book, because that's what it is. There's very little input from me. And say that that man was wrong. It's all his story, his words, right from the Great War in 1914, 1918, to his death in 1945. It's his story, just as Mein Kampf is. So it's a very, very good epilogue to Mein Kampf. Buy it, The Last Testament, because again, as I keep on saying, if you become reliant on the internet for your information, then you are handing the keys to your library to somebody else unknown who will pull. Now, I've got, as you have, lots of links to YouTube. They've all disappeared. It's the same with the books. The books that inspired me when I was young, they're all gone. They've all been bought up and not reproduced. So go into the bookstore, you're going to find Sculptures of the Third Reich, which is very popular. You're going to find an entire new series called Saga of the Seas. Now, who isn't fascinated by the Sagas of the Seas? I'm working on The All Lies Invasion, which is one of the most popular books we've ever did, and on volume two. And we've got new volumes of poetry which are coming up. So there is something for everybody. So every time you purchase for yourself or a friend or a member of your family a book, you are helping the Europe Renaissance keep your damn money out of the pockets of the big corporations. Please support your own, because this is our Achilles heel. Thank you, Andrew, for the opportunity. I hope I didn't overrun with the time you have kindly given me.
No, thank you, Mike. You're absolutely spot on time. So, folks, I want to thank Mike so much for joining me today on a show entitled We Don't Need People Anymore. I want to thank all of you for listening. I will, of course, be back with you all tomorrow. And until then, folks, I hope you have a wonderful day, and bye for now.